and welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us on Alaska Public Media as we travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans.
This week, we're featuring a panel discussion entitled, How Does Transportation Planning Work and How Can I Engage? This event took place April 11th at the 49th State Brewing Company and was hosted by Alaska Common Ground. This is the first of a series of discussions being held on transportation issues, which are entitled From Here to the Future, Transforming Anchorage and Matsu Transportation. Today's show is an edited version of the discussion that took place. If you'd like to hear the full-length show, please visit the Addressing Alaskans page at alaskapublic.org.
Hi, I'm John Parsi, and I'm from Alaska Common Ground, and we're going to start our event as kind of to get us started on this transportation issue. The first thing we want to do is kind of give a recap of the first two events we had, where we had Roland Stanley and Mayor Soglin from Madison, Wisconsin, talked about how a lot of transportation development occurs on two sides. And the first, in terms of what Roland Stanley talked about, was about development of transportation itself. Making real assessments of how big your city is, where transportation needs can address those issues. He was a big advocate in Alaska, in Anchorage in particular, about rapid bus transit versus, you know, pipe dreams about light rail or other forms of mass transit. And I think his big note, his big take home for me is that the greatest plague on the American city is the cul-de-sac. So if you live in a cul-de-sac, just tear it out, just get rid of it. And the reason why, apparently, is because fire trucks can't drive straight through cul-de-sacs unless they drive through your home. And so it makes it a lot more expensive to maintain fire departments. I had no idea, so I was enlightened about that. And the other thing he was really upset about is one-way roads. He really does not like one-way roads, neither did Mayor Soglin, who both said our one-way roads should be eliminated. Instead, we should have wider sidewalks. Apparently, our sidewalks are not sufficiently wide for other northern folks. Mayor Soglin, instead of focusing on kind of the transit side, focused on the development of a city and how you have to have zones within a city that allow for mixed use development and address those issues first and develop your city before you can address transportation issues. But today we're going to be looking more toward how are transportation decisions and funding and other issues addressed? And I know that that's a big issue for a lot of people, and I'm glad that you're here, that you're interested in these issues. And I know that in a lot of ways it's been a big issue in Anchorage today in particular. We will not be addressing that particular issue necessarily with our speakers because it's not their area of expertise, but you're free to ask questions as always. And bringing up questions, there'll be people walking around with note cards. There are note card folks, and if you have questions, you can write them on the note card and then address them to me, and then I will ask the questions for our presenters. And we have four excellent presenters today, and I will introduce them all together up front. We have Los Epstein, who's speaking as an engineer and former director of the Alaska Transportation Priorities Project. Jennifer Witt, who's the former planner of the Alaska DOT and PF. And Brooks and Associate, who's one of our co-sponsors for this event. And then Jessica Smith, who's a planner with the Matsu Borough. And they will all be talking about different issues. So Jennifer will be speaking from a state perspective, Jessica from a regional local perspective, and from a consultant perspective, and then Lois from the public perspective. How does the public engage with transportation issues? So without further ado, we'll start with Jennifer, who will be our first presenter.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to start out asking a couple of questions here. How many people in the audience filled up their car with gasoline in the last 2 weeks? Okay. How many of you have a car that gets more than 20 miles to the gallon? Okay. How many of you drive a car that gets less? Okay, question I have for you is, do you think that the amount of that your miles per gallon should determine the amount of tax you pay for the roads that we drive on? Do you think that one just because it gets less gas mileage, does more damage to the road than one that gets better gas mileage? Do you think there's a relationship there? Okay. Well, that's going to be the foundation of my presentation here, is going to be talking about transportation funding. How do we, as citizens, how do we, as Alaska residents, and how do we, as taxpayers, support a transportation system? And by way of introduction, my name is Jennifer Witt. I retired last summer from the Alaska Department of Transportation after a 30-year state career, 28 of it with DOT, and all of that 28 years being involved with transportation planning. A lot of it on the funding, and from inception through construction, with long-range transportation planning, with programming of federal funds, with and remaining involved through project development. And so that's the perspective that I bring. And so there's three takeaways this evening. One is, how do we fund transportation on a capital and an operating side? And there's two numbers. One is 18.4 and one is 8, and we'll come back to that. The second one is the golden rule and the strings that come with that golden rule, and that is also related to funding. And then three, in opening kind of for the foundation of the rest of the speakers here, is how does that golden rule and those strings impact public engagement for transportation? And so with that, I also have spent many hours and through my career at public meetings, and I've often wondered, if I didn't work for DOT, would I have attended them? And so I have to say, this evening, having this environment with food and drink is very inviting, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk. So this graph is a very simplified version of how we pay for transportation in Alaska, and largely as a country. Every time you fill your gasoline tank, 18.4 cents goes to the Highway Trust Fund. That is your federal gasoline tax. That 18.4 cents has not changed as a gas tax level since 1993. And so that money across the country is all aggregated through through Congress, through their appropriations bills, and through US DOT and Federal Highway Administration, and it's redistributed to the states. And this is the foundation of our the capital budget, and I'm going to distinguish a little bit in a couple of slides between capital and operating. Capital, in for what I'm talking about, is the $450 million roughly a year that Alaska receives in federal highway or federal transportation funds, as opposed to operating, which is used to plow snow and to paint the roads and to remove the gravel and all that kind of stuff. So the money is, as I mentioned, it goes back to the states. It's a very complicated formula, and it actually has a very good return on investment. For every dollar Alaskans pay into the Highway Trust Fund, we receive about $5 or $6 back. That's how we get to that $450 million number. And pretty good return on investment, right? So that means that every time you fill your gas tank, and this is where the difference, you know, for frequency of filling and the type of car you drive, determines how much you are contributing to that funding level. And so 18.4 cents, you know, it roughly would come out to about 92 cents that we're getting back. So one could say that we actually spend other people's money on our transportation system. And with that kind of tax return. The other thing that I mentioned earlier was the distinction between capital and operating. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about, okay, this is a map that shows what each state pays in state gas taxes. And this is separate, this is in addition to that 18.4 cents a gallon you pay. And so that money for Alaska, that 8 cents per gallon, goes into the state general fund. And it generates statewide about $40 million a year. Now, when you look at what DOT's biggest budget item is, it's for maintenance and operations. And that is about $120, $140 million a year. So again, pretty good return on investment. We are contributing 8 cents per gallon that we pay in gas tax to the state coffers, to the operations and maintenance, if you want to say, even though it's not dedicated. That's what we as individuals pay. And I think it's an important thing to keep in mind as we go forward and talk about, you know, what is a fit in the conversations statewide that are going on right now about taxes. How do we pay for the services and for the facilities that we use? And so this is kind of the foundation. You will see that Alaska has the lowest gas tax. We're number 50. And this is just the price per gallon that's strictly related to the gasoline. Okay. Actually, I'm going to back up a little bit. I did it. The golden rule and strings. That was my second point. The golden rule, he who has the gold makes the rules, right? Those federal dollars, that $450 million a year that we receive back from USDOT from the Highway Trust Fund, has a lot of strings attached to it. And that's where transportation planning, and that's where I can touch on AMATS a little bit. But it basically, it is formulaic in terms of the things that the state must do in order to be able to receive and expend federal dollars. In Anchorage, anybody heard of AMATS? Has anybody had the pleasure of attending an AMATS meeting? Okay, yes. AMATS is a formalized process that, because of the size of the community, at the time it was established, there was a formal planning process required for any community of a certain density for 50,000 or more people. And so that process has been, in place for, I see Craig's here, I think it's probably about over 30 years. And basically, it is very procedural, process-directed, checks and balances, and I can tell you if you ever want to be sued, violate process. And so, just very briefly, the final decision-making for funding that comes to Anchorage is a 5-member panel of 3 municipal, 2 state. I'm at 2 minutes. And that's worthy and merits its own discussion. So that's the golden rule and the strings attached. And so I will go to the third and final slide I have. Oops. So, given the fact that these processes and project development take so long, how do you effectively and consistently engage the public? You will see that what this graph shows is that when you have the greatest ability to influence decisions is when we historically have the least amount of interest. That's at the planning stage. That is at the long-range transportation. We're talking 20 years. Then it moves into funding programs with their own processes. And then it moves into the project development. And depending on the complexity, that can take, 10 to 15 years. And so the question is, on the federal side with the state program, how do you maintain public confidence in your transportation decision making and in your planning process when it takes so long? And I don't have much time to go into it, but I have included over here a map. It looks like either a mountain range or somebody is an AFib, really bad. And this shows the traffic on the Glen Highway, and it is something that we're going to be grappling with because of now that there is the Knickerbocker crossing is taken off of the table right now, without redundancy in the system, there's going to be a lot more pressure on the Glen Highway. And when you consider that Anchorage, the whole Anchorage bowl actually fits geographically between Palmer and Wasilla, we definitely have some issues. So with that, thank you, and I look forward to your questions.
Thank you very much. And so I think the take-home message is get involved and get involved early. Especially I see a lot of young people out there and you're like, 20 years from now, I want the bus route to impact, Girdwood. get involved today for 20 years from now is basically the take-home message. That's part of planning that appears to be an area where you can have the most influence, where you have the most leverage. And in terms of questions, we'll bring the questions around together to the whole panel at the end of all our speakers. So if you have questions that arise for one of the early speakers, you can ask them later. It's perfectly fine. So our next presenter will be Jessica Smith from the Mat-Su Borough.
Thank you. My name is Jessica Smith. I'm the Mat-Su Borough Transportation Planner. In the Mat-Su Borough, transportation planning is happening right now. With the 20-year plan for that's very traditional in transportation planning that Jennifer was just talking about, you have an opportunity right now, between now and May the 12th when I cut off comments, to have your voice heard. This has been a process that's been going on for the last 3 years, and it started off with a get-together that there are people in the audience here that were actually there, and they have been there through the whole time. And what we talked about was how land use and transportation may be connected. just like a little bit. And you were laughing a little bit, but it's tough for us to remember that, because especially in a place like Alaska, where personal property rights are very important to us, do not tell me what to do with my backyard. And so if you're trying to do something that's for the good of the whole community, like transportation systems planning, it can be pretty difficult to get into a room full of folks who have a very clear idea of what they should and shouldn't be able to do with their own property. And what makes it a little bit more challenging is they also have a very clear idea of what your government should and should not do with government-owned property. So it gets a little bit cumbersome to have that conversation. But the Mat-Su community really came together and they started talking about this, and they said, you know what, this makes a lot of sense. We would like to have safe and reliable access to different types of land uses, and just think of them as properties, whether it's owned by Target or it's owned by yourself. Folks want safe and reliable connections to their property. So I bring to you today the roadshow. This is the long-range transportation plan, which has been worked on for these last couple of years. The document is out there for public comment. It's the pre-final, if you will. There's these cool little business cards back there that will take you to a website that will show you more than what I'm showing you today, and it's a lot more fun. There's an interactive map where you can put a comment on the intersection that you hate the most, and there's also a place where you can look at the full enchilada, which is a little 60-page plan that, you know, kind of looks like this. And then there's the technical appendix for those of you who are really interested in transportation planning and what goes into the system development, that's like 200 pages long. I would recommend it if you're having trouble sleeping. So what's really important to Anchorage folks about Mat-Su transportation is that we have this funky little umbilical cord that attaches us, and we have over 14,000 folks a day traveling back and forth between the Mat-Su and Anchorage. That's a lot of people coming in here and commuting to work. We love to come in here and work at the jobs in Anchorage and then go back to our giant houses that allow us to have chickens in our backyard. So it's very important to have not only the economic generate that is Anchorage, but also what's happening out there, if you're not from the Valley, is that we have our own economic generators that are happening, and folks are spending a lot more time looking for a job out in the Valley so that they can live and work there. So we asked a couple of questions starting about 3 years ago, and that's, what does Mat-Su transportation look like to you? And I asked that question to this crowd too, because if you're an Anchorage resident, and perhaps you were one like I was for about 9 months, and I was an Anchorage resident that commuted to a job in the Valley, it was really important to me that the road between here and there, and there's no other way to get from here to the Valley except on the Glen Highway, it was important for me that didn't break down. when Jennifer talked about redundancy in the system, she was talking about other ways to get from here to there. Within the Anchorage core, you have multiple ways to go north, south, east, west on a road system. In the MATSU, not only do we only have one way to get from here to there, when you get out there, there's often only one way to get from one side to the other. We now have three ways to get from Wasilla to Palmer with the extension of the Bogard Road, but this was something that wasn't there before, and that connection just happened a couple of years ago. So what is a long-range transportation plan? Textbook would tell you that it's something that's going to establish goals, it's going to give you strategies for how to reach those goals, and then sometimes you have an implementation plan, and that is my favorite part because I really like to see things get improved. I want to see things get built. My background is as an engineer, and so as a designer, what's super fun is for your design to get built. It's not fun to wait for 20 years for your design to get built, but it happens all the time, especially in the particular type of engineering that I chose to go into. So based on these questions, where will you be in 2035? Again, there's that 20-year design life. And then what are you going to need from your transportation system? So if you think of where you are going to be in 20 years, I am hopefully going to be retired. I hate driving a car, so I want to not do that. And, I'm going to have a different kind of income, perhaps, than I maybe had had in the last earning years of my life. So, and that's only if I saved okay, right? And everything works out in that particular market. So my life may be very different, and I may have very different needs. You may be in a similar situation where you are going to need totally different things today than you will in 20 years. So when we put this LRTP together and we started asking these questions, what do you need from your transportation system? We identified challenges and risks, because those are the things that challenges and risks to your transportation system are the things that we need to focus on to perhaps focus our priorities and our resources. These are the things that are going to be barriers, things that can break down your system so that it's your level of service is nothing. So some of the things on this challenges and risks are stuff we see everywhere, you know, like transportation governance, talking about who makes the decisions about how transportation is paid for and funded and what goes where. You may have funding challenges like we're having all over the state now. And in years ago when I moved to Alaska, I came to Alaska because the recession in the lower 48 was in such a way that funding challenges were everywhere, and it was such a bad situation that they couldn't hire engineers. So another one that's kind of a funky challenge but doesn't always pop up as much is equity. And that is, what is equitable to all the users of the transportation system, and how do we decide what that is? So we came up with this really beautiful chart that just makes me very happy. It's got all the goals and then the strategies that perhaps could be used to reach these goals. And they're super cool, like develop green streets policies. And if you don't know what that is, you can Google it, and they're really cool YouTubes. So the other thing that we touched on in our LRTP is measuring the performance of our system. And so, and these are things that they do here in Anchorage. AMATS is your long-range transportation planning place to go to. And out there, we're looking for things like, we're not required to measure our performance yet, but performance-based planning is something that we will be required to do in the future. That AMATS model that Jennifer was talking about, when you reach that density threshold and a population number, the MATSU reached the density threshold at the 2010 census, which is over 500 persons per square mile, and we just barely came under the population threshold, which was it's 50,000. And you've probably all heard that we're over 100,000 in the MATSU, but we're so spread out that we only met that density threshold kind of like from Palmer down KGB. So what we're looking at is in 2020 to be designated as the same type of federal organization that AMATS is, but out in the MATSU. So when we get there, we're going to need those performance measures. This is a problem that Jennifer was talking about, where your funding's a little light and your needs are a little heavy. And then, of course, we've got roadway improvements, and I'm at the end of my time. But the other cool map is a map of what those recommended road improvements are, and it's sitting back here on this table. It's double-sided and labeled and color-coded, and this is what you might look at and go, you know, I agree with that, I don't agree with that, and what are your thoughts for those types of things? Questions, comments can be brought to the planning department. You can go to msblrtp2035.com. That online open house will be up until May the 12th. Thank you so much.
You're tuned in to KSKA Anchorage, Alaska Public Media. We're listening to a panel discussion exploring how transportation decisions are made and how local citizens can get involved. This event was hosted by Alaska Common Ground on April 11th at 49th State Brewing Company. We return now to the discussion.
Our next speaker is going to be Anne, who's going to provide our consultant perspective.
Good evening, everyone. It's fun to be here to talk about one of my favorite subjects and the subject that I've spent the last 24 years of my life working in, and that is trying to get public involvement, public input into planning processes like the one that Jennifer just spoke about. I was going to start with a couple of definitions or things that I think is really important about public involvement. I'm going to talk about a different golden rule. My golden rule is to treat others as you would expect to be treated. So if a road project's coming by my house, when I set up my public involvement plan, I want to set that up with the expectation that if that was my road and that was my street and that was my commuter area or my business, this is how I would want to be invited into the process and talked to about the process. Public involvement is really importantly about relationship building. As many people I see in this audience that have worked in transportation for a long time, we've spent our careers trying to build relationships with the communities that we work in. This is really important. And probably also as important is public involvement should be about making better decisions. If we can all honestly discuss the scope, the problems to be solved, the funding, the regulations, the other golden rules that Jennifer talked about, then we're gonna have better projects for our neighborhood. I have been working in transportation for 24 years, so what's changed over that time? I think in 1993 when I started my business, typically we sent out a postcard or a newsletter and we invited people to a meeting in a facility such as this. Today we are seeing brick and mortar meetings declining. We're seeing virtual meetings, we're seeing streaming meetings, we're seeing communications with Twitter and Facebook. We're seeing project teams develop projects, fly a drone over it to show how that roundabout or that facility is going to work. The tools have really changed. The instantaneous communication affects our public involvement, and it can rapidly affect our public process. 20 years ago, when we went to public meetings and we talked about process, the public would talk more in terms of what's the greater good, what's best for us, what's best for all. I've seen that really change to more of a focus on what's in it for me. And I think that is a big change. The other thing that's changed a lot is in 1993, most of our audiences were white. In 2017, we have over 100 languages spoken in our school district. 45% of the students in the Anchorage School District are less than 45% are white, and approximately 36% of those folks are economically disadvantaged in some way. And I always look at the statistics of the Anchorage School District because it's a good snapshot of the stakeholders that we will need to connect with. I want to talk a little bit about some of the challenges that affect public involvement. One is just basically getting people to show up, getting people to engage. How do we reach them? How do we reach the demographics that mirror our society? How do we get to seniors? How do we get to youth? How do we get, one of my challenges in working in rural airports, we're always working on a 20-year plan. The people, the 20-something, 30-something folks are going to be most affected at the end of that plan are not in the room. So that's a challenge that we'll all face over time. Learning from one another in the process. I think over time I've found this is one of the most important things. Public involvement should be a two-way dialogue. We should learn from one another. What are the guidelines we're working on under? Where does the funding come from? Does the funding have strings? Is there a local planning document that provides guidance for my project? Is the project in the long range plan or the bike plan or the ped plan or the trails plan or the freight plan? How do these all interact? Part of our challenge is to help enunciate that. What are the problems we're trying to solve? And how are we going to do that? That learning from one another is really key to having that discussion that's necessary to get to a really good decision and a really good project. We read in the Dispatch News this week about the low voter turnout. As it relates to public involvement, I think there is a certain amount of stakeholder fatigue. We are bombarded. I mean, how many of us go away from the office for a week and come home to over 2,000 emails? I mean, it's a really common occurrence. We're bombarded with all kinds of things. You add in a busy family, getting your kids to soccer, all these other things. It's hard to get those people to engage. And then we have some challenges sometimes with actually who gets involved, who shows up. Sometimes I'll send out 3,500 postcards for a project. I'll get maybe 15, 20 phone calls. I'll get 40 people to the meeting. Does it mean that over 3,000 people that received that card are like okay with the way you're going with your project? Decisions are made by people who show up. And so it's really important to keep that in mind. We're seeing shifts that have made for big changes in projects. I worked on Spinard Road. It's going to go to construction this year. Yay. But it has taken, I'm almost embarrassed to say I've worked on that project for over 15 years. The project started as a safety project. It got stalled by a handful of business owners. It got juggled around by administrations. Community organizations came up. The bicycle group of Anchorage has been really strongly advocating for the improvements that are in that project. And the Spinard Chamber of Commerce reached out and got their businesses behind an improvement that's going to be important. So we're seeing those kinds of influences. And as projects take a long time to implement, lots of changes can happen in that constituency. How people get involved in Alaska is a really fun thing. You know, I can look out at some of my clients that are in the room and say, you know, how many times have we been working on a project and the stakeholder wrote a letter to the governor and copied all the legislators and everyone in between, and you spent a whole lot of your time just responding to those kinds of requests without having the opportunity to just sit down and work out the issue? And many of those end runs, I call them, were in a personal self-interest. They weren't in the interest of the whole group. One of the most glaring examples of this was a project I worked on in South Anchorage. Our task was to upgrade a street to collector standards. Our collector standards in Anchorage include, you know, 2 12-foot lanes, shoulder, pathway on one side and a sidewalk on the other. It was around the time that the community was having discussions about the South Coastal Trail, and there was a group of residents that were very concerned about the South Coastal Trail. When that project came before the assembly to approve the construction contract, they removed the line item funding for the trail. So we were going completely against our community guidance for projects. The things that I would hope that we do is think about that stakeholder group in total and recognize that every engineer in the room, every resident in the room is also an employee, a business owner, a commuter, a user of end products that arrive by trucks. We have to have conversations about our projects. And I know Jennifer showed that graph with when to get involved, and I helped develop that years ago. And I would say that now that we're having conversations statewide about funding, that it's more and more important to reevaluate those decisions and make sure that what we're spending our time and money on is the most important, you know, is the most important place in our community at this time. That sometimes it may take a long time, but there are times when the funding picture changes that we need to reevaluate where we're spending our money and how we're spending our money so that we do it, we use our public funds in the most efficient way. And I do have other points, but hopefully we'll get to those in questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think those notes are well appreciated and multifaceted, and I think caring about our community as a whole and the impacts that it has, and particularly our fiscal crisis, state fiscal crisis, are important for our future. But to get to our crowd of pro-commuter train folks to address their issue, if you want to come back, our next event will be on Tuesday, April 25th, right here at 7 p.m., and we'll have speakers who will talk from Kittleson Associates, Bike Anchorage, regarding the passenger rail for commuters, and the Planning Committee, and Alaska Trails. So a lot of those issues will be, in terms of commuter rail, at least will be addressed during that panel, which will be Tuesday, April 25th, again here at 49th State. But we're hearing a consistent message across all of our presenters, and that's, we have outsized leverage early on in the process. So involvement early on in making these decisions is the area where we, as residents, as members of the public, can have the most impact in terms of these transportation decisions. So I think that becomes important to understand and is kind of a note for us to remember as we're trying to make decisions about how to use our time and where to have those types of influences. And the other important thing is please ask more questions. I think I have one question card right now. Looks like Cliff has a few more. But the more questions we have, the more we can engage, and this is a great opportunity to do so with what is a terrific panel. And our last presenter for tonight, I'm going to give a special shout out to because she's not only housed members of Alaska Common Ground as we've gone through the process putting together the transportation events, but she's been pretty instrumental in leading this group and getting these events off the ground. So thank you very much and welcome up, Lois.
Thanks, John, and hello, everyone. My name is Lois Epstein. I'm an engineer, and I worked from 2007 to 2010 on a statewide public interest nonprofit solely on transportation. I also served for 6 years on the AMATS Technical Advisory Committee, and my background in transportation is both professional and since that time, I'm doing different sorts of work, so it's also as a volunteer, so I can relate to all of you who are just in this on a part-time basis. So I wanted to thank everyone for coming and for your interest in transportation and its important counterparts, planning and funding, which I know are not the most exciting topics. But when Alaska Common Ground was thinking about this particular panel, we didn't want to focus on a very detailed description of process. That's why you're not seeing a lot of PowerPoints. We wanted to give everyone a general sense of how transportation decisions are made and are encouraging people to get more engaged once they have a little bit of knowledge, and then the folks at the Muni, the state folks, can help you along, and there's plenty of people in this room that know the details of the processes. But I don't want you to leave without any idea of what some of the main steps are, so you have a long-range planning process. We heard some about that. You have, as it gets closer, when we figure out where the money is going to go, the legislature is involved. You have something called a STIP process. And Jennifer actually, in her PowerPoint, included the graph. That's the Statewide Transportation Implementation Program. I hope I got that exactly right. And then you have the project process. So all those particular points have public input as part of it. And as some of the Alaska Common Ground people said, we need to know what AMATS is. And AMATS is the Anchorage Metropolitan Area Transportation Solutions body. It's a planning body. It's required by federal law. That's where the strings come in. And we have two in the state. We have AMATS and we have FMATS in Fairbanks. And possibly the MATSU will be large enough population-wise and dense enough that they may have one after the next census. But that has a lot to do with how much funding we have to work with. So in terms of my perspective on public engagement, as you heard tonight from Jennifer, the state's heavily reliant on federal funds for transportation, more so than any other state. That's very significant because we get such a high rate of return. A lot of times people think we're getting free money from the federal government. They are not as invested in those decisions as those of us who would really like to see, especially when you ask a lot of hard questions and you don't get good answers. So because the federal government will pay about 90% of the cost for major new roads, many Alaskans think new roads are essentially free. And that's a real problem when you want to design a rational system. Our maintenance doesn't come from the federal government. With our state revenues, which we know are always very tight, generally our maintenance isn't up to snuff because we don't spend enough local and state money on that. So what about public engagement? I have some bad news and I have some good news. The bad news is it's tough, as we heard tonight, to engage on transportation issues in Anchorage and statewide for a variety of reasons. I would say the local and state websites are actually pretty poor. I would recommend that for those folks that are working on these issues, I compare our websites to Madison, Wisconsin. That was one reason we brought the mayor there. And to Minnesota DOT, much more public-friendly sites. Additionally, I would argue, having served on the AMATS Technical Committee, that it's public involvement and buy-in into some of those decisions that AMATS is making, it's not a large enough part of what AMATS does. And I would add the state as well. Other agencies in the state are much more engaged with the public than state DOT is. And it's really got to become a core value. And as we heard from Anne, you know, it's unfortunate because the more public involvement you get, the more you're going to avoid expensive and difficult conflicts later. You know, we need to talk things out as much as we can. I have a few other concerns about AMATS engaging with the public. AMAT's composition is very heavily focused to the professionals working in transportation. There are a number of advisory committees to AMATS. That's very good. Some of those should have representatives on the technical committee. That would definitely give them a bigger voice. And also encourage people to serve if they know that their recommendations are being taken up. And also, I would suggest that AMATS, which meets during the workday, it's tough for the public to get to those meetings, and it's tough when there's an agenda that has a lot of business items that many of the public are not there to weigh into. So I'm going to start with the good news now. The public definitely in Anchorage has made a difference by engaging in particular projects, though it's not easy or quick, as those who have worked on Spinard Road upgrades or stopping the Kinnickarn Bridge and the UMed Road know. I'm going to use the Kinnickarn Bridge as an example here and give you a very brief summary of everything that happened. The bridge started with the state legislature passing a bill creating the Kinnickarn Bridge and Toll Authority in 2003. Later, Congressman Young and Senator Stevens earmarked over $220 million for the bridge, federal money, but that was nowhere near enough to build a $1 billion or more project. But everybody thought, wow, we got a bunch of money. We got to move it forward. In 2005, Congress removed the earmark and told the state that they could spend the money on other projects, and that's because the Gravina Bridge in Ketchikan and the Kinnickarn Bridge became kind of notorious as bridges to nowhere, and that was on the cover of Parade magazine. And so rather than completely eliminating the money, we worked out an agreement with Congress that we would still get the money, but we can spend it more freely. Nevertheless, the legislature and Governor Parnell continued to spend money on the Kinnickarn Bridge. So the Kinnickarn Bridge and Toll Authority's own study way back in 2005, a long time ago, showed that it was longer in distance, more time, and would require a toll to travel to Anchorage from Wasilla compared to driving the Glen Highway. That meant that only the sparsely populated areas west of Wasilla would benefit from the bridge. That's an important point, and it was found early in the process. That's how the process is supposed to work. But it took an additional 11 years of opposition by a group of volunteers, and we fondly called ourselves the Bridge Club, and then the state going broke before the millions in federal tax dollars that were being spent on the bridge would stop flowing. We developed fact sheets. We testified endlessly before the legislature when they were giving the Kinnickarn Bridge and Toll Authority another chunk of money. We commented when federal officials came to town. We spoke to the media whenever we could. When the state revenues went down, there was basically we had laid the groundwork for cutting the money for the bridge to become kind of obvious. So the public engagement over the long run was absolutely essential because we knew the facts were out there and the public support for the decision was there when Governor Walker eventually decided to cancel the project. So while this largely volunteer effort opposing the bridge was a success, in a rational world not affected by politicians and bureaucrats who need to respond to them, the bridge would have been stopped much, much earlier, I would argue, in the mid-2000s, and that would have meant $80 million, literally, in transportation funds would have been spent on other projects that would have been better for Alaskans. So public and official time and money would not have been wasted by a project which really had a very, very limited justification. So I've been inspired by Alaska Common Ground's two previous speakers and the large number of people who came to listen and the folks in the audience who are interested in improving transportation in the region. So I would argue that we should think hard about making some changes to the current decision-making processes and structures, and that would help to strengthen public engagement and input opportunities, and as a result, improved infrastructure will follow from that. So thank you.
So now we're to the question portion of the evening. Our first question is transportation funding. What are the best ways to advocate in favor of funding? If I want to advocate for more transit funding, who, what, when, where?
Actually, one of my calls to action that I failed to mention was to encourage people to, and now's a very critical time to be contacting our congressional delegation regarding transit funding. It's my understanding, and I've gotten different reports, but basically the draft spending bill proposed by President Trump greatly reduces or eliminates, for example, funding for Amtrak as well as for capital funding for transit. So there's some huge reductions in there. And so definitely contacting our congressional delegation. And it's not just highways. It was in the paper, was it yesterday or today, that the Essential Air Service is targeted for elimination as well. And that has tremendous impacts to our rural communities, making transportation affordable. So writing your congressman, and I could say that now because I no longer work for DOT.
Hi,
Hi, and from a local perspective, that's also another great place to go and talk to your local officials. So here in Anchorage, that's your assembly at the Muni, and out in the Mat-Su, that's the assembly, the Mat-Su Borough Assembly. Even though there are federal funds out there for transit, and even if they are declining, you still need that local match. You still need local support. So even if it's your local officials saying, yes, we support transit, and what are they doing on the local side to support transit, whether that is a line item in their budget or having something as small as bus stop standards at your local level. So those are some ways that you can advocate for funding, and then also on your local side, be ready for that funding when it comes to your community.
And I'm just going to add, because the question came up, we've heard about commuter rail and we've heard about transit. I worked on a regional transit authority plan, and that some of the recommendations of that plan included changing to state law so you could have some dedicated funding for transit, and looking at, for lack of a better description, an overlay district that would cover Mat-Su and Anchorage, and that would provide some incremental tax funding for commuter rail or van pools or express bus between the valley and Anchorage. So there's some, aside from current funding streams, there are I think it's short-sighted for us not to consider some longer-term funding ideas for things like transit and particularly commuter sense.
Okay, so this is somewhat of a cynical question, so I'm going to reword it slightly and say, if people believe that the system is rigged and that they can't really have an influence on the system, why would they participate, and how can the public get involved? How do we get younger people, how do we get anyone involved into a system if people's tendency is to believe that they can't really have an impact?
I've heard this before, and I've been working in this industry for 12 years, and I've heard this from the day I stepped into it. Why should I show up? Nobody's going to listen to what I have to say. Now, I have kind of a big personality and a big voice, and I wouldn't have to use this microphone, but that doesn't mean that my voice is the most important. But if I'm the only person that shows up, that is the only voice that is heard. It goes back to this. For example, we have really low voter turnout in Alaska. It's a fact. Can you tell me that the reason folks are not showing up to vote is because they think the system is rigged? How can they say that when they're not showing up to vote? It's kind of a circular logic situation. So if you're showing up to your public meetings, and I know those are archaic, but if you're showing up to this event to hear this conversation, what kind of goes on behind the curtain, we believe in what we're doing, and we believe in it so much that we went into careers to help the system be better, to help reach more public, to help dedicate our lives to making that public process move. And when Lois was talking about being one of 11 and trying to move that ship, right? Maybe she was trying to move that ship for the betterment of the community, right? And that's an amazing way to look at it. But that whole ship, all of those other 11 folks, everybody had a perspective that they brought to the table. If you don't bring your perspective to the table to begin with, you have no hope of moving that ship. But if you show up, you've got a better chance. It's kind of like this. You want a new job, but you're never going to get it, are you? But your odds go up if you put in that application. So then you can start saying, I didn't get the job. So try it. Try participating in the in the process, and if it's still not working for you, this is the question that I want you to start asking your elected and appointed officials. This process does not work for me. I would like to change it. What can I do to fix it? Ask that question.
Yeah. And I will add, as a practitioner, there have been more than hundreds of phone calls or conversations I've had where I've said, this is why it's important for you to be here. This is what we need from you. Sometimes we have to help people understand the process so they can feel comfortable to enter the process, enter the room. And we sometimes have to, you know, hold a hand, have that discussion, say, you're obviously passionate about this. This is where you can get involved, and this is what you can do.
Another question that we had is about commercial use of our roads and highways. There is a lot of local commercial use coming in from the lower 48, and that has a lot of impact more than, you know, regular cars on our roads and highways. How is that, how are decisions in terms of funding made to look towards those equities?
Okay, when you drive on the Glen Highway and you're stuck in the ruts, do they fit your passenger car? Yes. And those are, and I, you know, even though, unless things have changed, Jim, you know, it's primarily the biggest damage-causing element is studded tires. Commercial vehicles are important ones, but they are not the ones that are, that it's not the weight of the vehicles. Our sub bases are good. The wear and tear is, I think, of maybe why it's a question. But I don't know if anybody else wants to add to that. Actually, I will say I have been a convert to the studless snow tires, and it had to do with some of the skid tests that they show some of these tires on, you know, studded versus the studless ones. But I can tell you that totaling my car in December, studs may have helped me. Yeah, so it is, it's one of those trade-offs. But what was one of the first taxes that Governor Palin took away? Or I think she did take away, we had an $8 a tire, huh? It was a user fee, and it went away. So again, yes, we do have a proclivity. I mean, we love our studded tires, but we don't pay for the, you know, there's not a commensurate way of offsetting the damage caused by them. So that would be my plug from my experience there. I had a rut in my office. I had a cross-section of Eagle River Loop Road that showed very clearly that the ruts did not go into the subbase. That you could see the layers of pavement over the years that had been added. It was, the subbase was solid. And that is true, even today. And I live in Eagle River. I drive the Glen Highway. It scares the hell out of me. So this summer, though, we're going to be getting new we collectively are getting new pavement. So
all I was going to say is that the comment about commercial traffic causing so much damage and what is the benefit of that or whatever. So in when I was a baby engineering student, what they teach you in traffic engineering is to estimate how much percent of your traffic is going to be truck traffic. That's your big commercial, right? Does anybody have an idea about how much they tell you to estimate of your total traffic? Well, you don't count. And neither is Braylon. And the thing is that all the engineers in their room are going like this, not because they know the answer, but because it's 5%. So when you think about 5% of your traffic doing some sort of damage that's disproportional, and I'm going to use a technical term here, they put bazillions of dollars into your economy. So 5% of your traffic, gazillion dollars in your economy. Thank you, Amazon.
I love it. So I want to thank our panelists for doing presentations tonight and willingness to answer these questions.
Thank you for tuning in to Addressing Alaskans today. We've been listening to an event hosted by Alaska Common Ground titled, How Does Transportation Planning Work and How Can I Engage? This was the first of a series of discussions about transforming Anchorage and Mat-Su transportation. This show is recorded on April 11th at 49 State Brewing Company. We were only able to feature a portion of the discussion from that night. In order to hear the rest, you can visit alaskapublic.org. I'm your host and producer for today's program, Eric Bork, for KSKA Anchorage.
Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Patrick Lee. The views expressed are those of the hosts and participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to our website at alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Learn more about Addressing Alaskans and listen online at alaskapublic.org.
Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.